Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Today, we live in an increasingly complex and challenging time. So now, more than ever, the world needs more Canada, the world needs more Canadians. Whereas in the entirety of the 20th century, we sent our people out to the front lines across the world, we are now on the front lines of new and evolving threats.
The Prime Minister, and we've heard that message that Canada's on the cusp of new threats and new concerns from our good friend, Vice Admiral Mark Norman, the former Vice Chief of the Defence Staff. When we've spoken with the Admiral about the defence capabilities of Canada and how integral our defence capabilities are with protecting, safeguarding, and moving our democracy forward. So this past week, the federal government, which recently declared it would cut $1 billion from military spending, released its overdue defence policy named Our North, Strong and Free, A Renewed Vision for Canada's Defence. This new policy is exploring spending many billions of dollars over a number of years in order to provide the CAF, the Canadian Armed Forces, with equipment that it requires. It ranges from submarines, that's being discussed, helicopters, ships, missile systems, modern artillery, and long-range and sea-launched missiles. We also need more personnel. We're some 16,000 short at present in order to create a credible fighting and defense force. Will it happen, though? That's the question. Will the necessary actions be taken to bring Canada's annual defense spending to the 2% of GDP required under NATO agreements? This new policy does not do that. Gets it, I think, to 1.79%. But Canada remains under pressure from its allies to reach the minimum 2% of GDP military spending. A lot to be considered here. Our guest is Lieutenant General Guy Thibault, former Vice Chief of the Defence Staff, retired, and Chair of the Conference of Defence Associations Institute. General Thibault, it's an honour to speak with you. Thank you, first of all, for your service to this country.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your interest. It's great to be with you.
Could you describe for us, please, before we talk about the policy that was brought forward, could you describe for us, please, what the current readiness of the CAF is to perform their mission of defending Canada and Canadians in the event of war, should that be necessary?
Well, it's great. It's a great first question. And, you know, the world that we're in, Roy, is come as you are, right? So we have the Canadian Forces in being, and the Government of Canada, the NC, asked the Canadian Forces to be ready for a number of missions. And so the question is, in terms of all of those missions, what's our state of readiness? You know, at home, we have seen that the Canadian Forces, time and again, is asked for to respond to domestic emergencies. And there's no question that the forces continue to, I think, be completely ready to do that, as we've demonstrated. Search and rescue happens. There's like 9,000 incidents every day. You know, those don't really get reported a lot, but Canadian Forces members are involved in saving lives at home every year. We have the NATO, our NORAD mission, of course, in partnership with the United States in protecting the continent. We're ready for that. I think, of course, we are on the front lines of the NATO assurance mission in Latvia right now, also involved with training the Ukrainian forces and involved in a number of different missions around the world. So in so much as we're executing the mission, we're ready for what we're being asked to do. The question I think that you're really asking is how ready are we for contingencies that are beyond what we are being asked to do today? And I think that, you know, the state of readiness of our armed forces in terms of our personnel capacities, our materiel readiness, the overall equipment that we have in terms of the kinds of capabilities for what we're seeing emerge in the conflicts that we're seeing in places like Ukraine, recognizes that, in fact, we're not at the levels of readiness that we would want to be to face those kind of threats and the kind of emerging challenges that we see in the future.
And the emerging challenges are significant, and particularly with China and Russia having eyes on the Canadian Arctic. And we've heard that from Admiral Norman. General, the Conference of Defense Association and CDA Institute release on news release on the statement on the defense policy update starts, the long-awaited defense policy update, our North Strong and Free, released on April 8, comes at a critical time. Can you flesh that out for us, please? When we talk about it being at a critical time, explain that to us, please.
Well, I think that Canadians in their own lives, Roy, are seeing that there are many changes, whether it be the technological changes we have, whether it be the kind of discourse we have. We're seeing concerns of interference by foreign states in our domestic affairs. We're seeing, of course, a hot war go on in Europe again, something that I think we hadn't imagined in our time that we would see again. Real concerns about an unhinged leader in North Korea with missiles and technology that we should be very concerned about. So, we've always characterized Canada living in what has been framed as a fireproof house. We've got these great oceans protecting us. We don't have I think the same concerns that you would find in many parts of the world. But it's clear that the issues that are unfolding in so many parts of the world affect us greatly. Whether it be the war that's going on between Ukraine and Russia, creating disruption in our economies, whether it be we're seeing in the Red Sea the Iranian Houthis and interference with shipping. We see China's ignoring the international rules in terms of their view of what they would wish to follow or not. And we're seeing in our own backyard or our own top yard, as we look to the Arctic, an area that's never really been of too much strategic concern just because it's been so inaccessible. But that is completely changing. So I think that the situation for Canada, which is so much of a crisis at this moment in time, is that it's happening so quickly and we're ill-adapted for all of those changes that we're seeing.
Am I overstating things if I say, and this is just based on interviews I've done over the years and conversations I've had with people in the military and in politics, we don't have the weapons at the moment that are required to do the job of defending Canada. We have 50-year-old jets, fighter jets. We don't see the F-35s for some time. We have tanks, which are largely immobile because they're rusted and their engines won't start. We have a handful of submarines whose reliability is in question. Our naval ships are in real need of replacement. It sounds to me in the conversations I've had, General Thibault, and this points to this policy and the significantly important aspect of properly rearming Canada and the Canadian military, it sounds like we'd be in serious trouble if we were under attack. We'd have wonderful people stepping forward and fighting to their last breath to defend this country, but they wouldn't have the equipment necessary to do the job. Is that an overstatement?
No, I don't think it's. I think it's an accurate kind of view of where Canada's defense has evolved over many years. And we took a very deep and long cut of the peace dividend after the end of the Cold War, and we focused on different kinds of threats over the last 30 years, really materially in terms of peacekeeping operations and. For 14 years in Afghanistan, the war on global terror, and when you think that that's kind of the nature of the fight you're going to be confronted with, you start to take, I think, risks with the kinds of capabilities that you really need. And I think that that's where ultimately, we're looking at the world very differently now, and with great power competition, and looking at a hot war, and looking at not only the really exquisite capabilities that are needed for countries like Canada and for our allies to be able to dominate against adversaries, but we're seeing in places like Ukraine and in the Middle East and the whole Gaza Strip, the use of technologies which are actually quite low tech, that are easily defeating systems that were never built for those kind of threats. So, you know, I think that this is an area where in the defense policy update, we're seeing the government land on a couple of key kind of ideas. First and foremost, this idea that we're on the front lines, I think, is a reference to the fact that the Arctic is opening up. This has been an area where long, our approach has been to endeavor to keep it to be non-confrontational in the sense of a military sphere of operations, but clearly Russia gets a say in this, and we're seeing their activities really ramp up. And we know now with faculty expansion of with the recent admission of NATO members, with Sweden and Finland joining, 7 of the 8 Arctic nations now are NATO nations. And I think this is an area where Canada really needs to focus and step up and be a leader in terms of how we operate in the far north. So that's an area where that means surveillance, it means having the capabilities to respond, it means having new kind of presence in terms of infrastructure in the north, and that's going to be a really expensive proposition. And most of those kind of requirements, including our subsurface capability, perhaps in terms of where we're going to go with new submarines, it's all going to contribute to how we do a better job of protecting our own sovereignty in Canada's far north. Mm-hmm. Other kind of capabilities, I'd say, Roy, is that we ultimately have always seen the need for Canada, 40 million people living within 160 kilometers of the U.S. border, the world's second largest territorial landmass, the world's largest coastlines. There's no way we can actually defend Canada by ourselves. So we do it through our collective security arrangements, and the NATO alliance is the cornerstone of that. And I think this is where, we have to make sure that that we're working very closely with NATO to make sure that our capabilities are well integrated with NATO nations, and that we're seen to be doing our fair share. And I think this is the issue of burden sharing and living up to the commitments that we have to be part and parcel of a collective security agreement where we all rely on each other.
So, General, we have about 3 minutes or so. Time goes by very quickly, doesn't it? Where do you see the positives in this update? And where is your greatest concern?
The fact that the Prime Minister stood up when they launched the policy update, what I thought was, first of all, I was pleased to see him do it, because he's actually not really taken the opportunity at home to kind of place his own emphasis on these issues. And I think that I get the sense that the government, and when I say this, it's not just the Minister of National Defense, but rather the government acknowledges that this is a big problem that has to be treated as a priority. So that's, I guess, I'm hopeful that the government gets the fact that these issues aren't just issues that the Minister of National Defense can fix by himself or the Canadian Forces, but rather it's going to need a whole of government. In fact, it can need kind of a whole of society, the industrial base, and Canadians themselves to kind of step up and support the forces, and whether that be in terms of encouraging folks towards joining the effort with the defense team and the Canadian Forces. So I think that's a positive. And as you said before the break, Canadians seem to be, these issues seem to be resonating with them. And I think that matters, because if Canadians don't really make this a priority or don't see it as a priority, then you can excuse governments for actually finding reasons to spend on other issues. So I think that to me is a positive difference right now about whether or not I have hope that they're actually going to be able to move forward on these ideas. if I have one big significant concern is that while the, you know, the services that we've got, the force services, our Navy, the Air Force, our Special Forces, and the Army, the three of the services...
I'm sorry to rush you. We literally have 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, I would just say that the vision for the Canadian Army, Roy, in this defense policy update seems to be missing. And the Army, I think, has a lion's share of the load, especially in NATO. And while we're making great investments for our NATO mission in Latvia, the rest of the regular force and the reserve forces, the field forces, are in very poor state of affairs, and most of their programs have been pushed to the right.
Okay.
I'm really worried about the state of the Canadian Army amongst all of the other elements of the Canadian forces.
General Thibault, thank you so much for the time. Good talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Roy.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.